Hi, I'm Barb Magella, and you're listening to Strange Brew with unusual facts, random information, and trivia from Mental Floss Online, and far-fetched, not at all factual news stories from The Onion Online. These readings may be irreverent and could, on occasion, contain language and content that some might find offensive. I hope you'll enjoy the program. Tonight, let's start with a story from mentalfloss.com. Entertainment. 10 Fast Facts About Jimi Hendrix by Jennifer Wood, September 2019. Though he's widely considered one of the most iconic musicians of the 20th century, Jimi Hendrix passed away as his career was really just getting started. Still, he managed to accomplish a lot in the approximately 4 years he spent in the spotlight and leave this world a legend when he died on September 18, 1970, at the age of 27. Here are 10 things you might not have known about the musical legend. 1. Jimi Hendrix didn't become Jimmy until 1966. Jimi Hendrix was born in Seattle on November 27, 1942, as John Allen Hendrix. He was initially raised by his mother, while his father, James Al Hendrix, was in Europe fighting in World War II. When Al returned to the United States in 1945, he collected his son and renamed him James Marshall Hendrix. In 1966, Chas Chandler, the bassist for The Animals, who would go on to become Jimmy's manager, saw the musician playing at Café Wah in New York City. This guy didn't seem anything special. Then all of a sudden he started playing with his teeth, roadie James Tappy Wright, who was there, told the BBC in 2016. People were saying, "What the hell?" And Chas thought, "I could do something with this kid." Though Hendrix was performing as Jimmy James at the time, it was Chandler who suggested he use the name Jimmy. 2. Muddy Waters turned Jimi Hendrix on to the guitar and scared the hell out of him. When asked about the guitarists who inspired him, Hendrix cited Buddy Holly, Eddie Cochran, Elmore James, and B.B. King. But Muddy Waters was the first musician who truly made him aware of the instrument. "The first guitarist I was aware of was Muddy Waters," Hendrix said. "I heard one of his old records when I was a little boy, and it scared me to death because I heard all these sounds." 3. Jimi Hendrix could not read music. In 1969, Dick Cavett asked the musician whether he could read music. "No, not at all," the self-taught musician replied. He learned to play by ear and would often use words or colors to express what he wanted to communicate. "Some feelings make you think of different colors," he said in an interview with Crawdaddy magazine. "Jealousy is purple. I'm purple with rage or purple with anger. And green is envy and all this." 4. Jimi Hendrix used his dreams as inspiration for his songwriting. Hendrix drew inspiration for his music from a lot of places, including his dreams. "I dreamt a lot, and I put a lot of my dreams down as songs," he explained in a 1967 interview with New Musical Express. "I wrote one called First Look, and another called The Purple Haze, which was all about a dream I had that I was walking under the sea." In another interview, he said the idea for Purple Haze came to him in a dream after reading a sci-fi novel believed to be Philip Jose Farmer's Night of Light. 5. Purple Haze features one of the music's most famous mondegreens. In the same interview with New Musical Express, it's noted that the Purple Haze lyric, "Excuse me while I kiss the sky," was in reference to a drowning man Hendrix saw in his dream, which makes the fact that many fans often mishear the line as, "Excuse me while I kiss this guy," even more appropriate. It was such a common mistake that Hendrix himself was known to have some fun with it, often singing the incorrect lyrics on stage, occasionally even accompanied by a mock makeout session. There's even a website, kissthisguy.com, dedicated to collecting user-generated stories of misheard lyrics. 6. Jimi Hendrix played his guitar upside down. Ever the showman, Hendrix's many guitar-playing quirks became part of his legend. In addition to playing with his teeth, behind his back, or without touching the instrument's strings, he also played his guitar upside down, though there was a very simple reason for that. He was left-handed. His father tried to get him to play right-handed, as he considered left-handed playing a sign of the devil. 7. Jimi Hendrix played backup for a number of big names. Though Hendrix's name would eventually eclipse most of those he played with in his early days, he played backup guitar for a number of big names under the name Jimmy James, including Sam Cooke, Little Richard, Wilson Pickett, Ike and Tina Turner, and the Isley Brothers. In addition to the aforementioned musical legends, Hendrix also helped actress Jane Mansfield in her musical career. In 1965, he played lead and bass guitar on Suey, the B-side to her single, As the Clouds Drift By. 8. Jimi Hendrix was once kidnapped after a show. Though the details surrounding Hendrix's kidnapping are a bit sketchy, in Room Full of Mirrors, a biography of Jimi Hendrix, Charles R. Cross wrote about how the musician was kidnapped following a show at The Salvation, a club in Greenwich Village. He left with a stranger to score cocaine, but was instead held hostage at an apartment in Manhattan. The kidnappers demanded that Hendrix's manager, Michael Jeffrey, turn over Jimmy's contract in exchange for his release. Rather than agree to the ransom demand, Jeffrey hired his own goons to search out the extorters. Mysteriously, Jeffrey's thugs found Jimmy 2 days later, unharmed. It was such a strange incident that Noel Redding suspected that Jeffrey had arranged the kidnapping to discourage Hendrix from seeking other managers. Others argued that the kidnapping was authentic. 9. Jimi Hendrix opened for the Monkees. Though it's funny to imagine such a pairing today, Hendrix warming up the Monkees' crowd of teeny bopper fans actually made sense for both acts back in 1967. For the band, having a serious talent like Hendrix open for them would help lend them some credibility among serious music fans and critics. Though Hendrix thought the Monkees' music was dishwater, he wasn't well known in America, and his manager convinced him that partnering with the band would help raise his profile. One thing they didn't take into account: the young girls who were in the midst of monkey mania. The Monkees' tween fans were confused by Hendrix's overtly sexual stage antics. On July 16, 1967, after playing just 8 of their 29 scheduled tour dates, Hendrix flipped off an audience in Queens, New York, threw down his guitar, and walked off the stage. 10. You can visit Jimi Hendrix's London apartment. In 2016, the London flat where Hendrix really began his career was restored to what it would have looked like when Jimi lived there from 1968 to 1969, and reopened as a museum. The living room that doubled as his bedroom is decked out in bohemian decor, and a pack of Benson and Hedges cigarettes sits on the bedside table. There's also space dedicated to his record collection. Amazingly, the same apartment building, which is located in the city's Mayfair neighborhood, was also home to George Handel from 1723 until his death in 1759. The rest of the building serves as a museum to the famed composer's life and work. From mentalfloss.com, animals. Shocker. This electric eel delivers more voltage than any creature on Earth. By Jake Rawson, September 2019. Eels are proving to be more slippery than previously believed. A newly identified species of these skinny fish, yes, eels are really fish, delivers more electric voltage than any other creature on the planet. All species in their taxonomic order, gymnotiforms, are capable of producing a modest electrical field to help them navigate, a perk that compensates for their poor vision. But electric eels in the genus Electrophorus pack a far more potent punch. They bear three organs full of cells that can produce electricity on demand. The cells act as a defense mechanism and can effectively taser prey into submission. In a study published in Nature Communications, researchers collected more than 100 electric eels in the Amazon region and analyzed their DNA, their voltage, and their habitat. To their surprise, they found that the single known species of electric eel, Electrophorus electricus, was actually three distinct species. They gave the two new ones the very heavy metal names of E. veri and E. volti, the latter, named for Alessandro Volta, who invented the electric battery, produced the strongest shock, 860 volts, topping the previous record of 650 volts. Why the varying strength? The researchers suggested that some eels occupy water with low salt content and therefore reduced conductivity. A stronger charge may be needed to deliver an effective jolt. While those numbers sound formidable, their low current means a shock wouldn't necessarily be harmful to a human. Voltage is the measure of pressure of the flow of electrons. Current or amperage is the volume of electrons. Eels have high voltage but low current. Household power outlets have lower voltage but more current and can be deadly. Eels might startle you with a shock, but it won't be fatal. If you should find yourself in a school of electric eels bent on subduing you, however, the shocks could result in brief incapacitation that could lead to drowning or an aggravation of an existing heart condition. The study authors hope to eventually film a coordinated eel attack on non-human prey. The discovery of two new species was quite literally shocking, lead author Carlos David de Santana told the New York Times. From mentalfloss.com, Dream Job Alert. You can get paid $1,000 to drink coffee for a month, as long as you avoid chains. By Michelle Debchak, September 2019. Sustaining a caffeine habit can be costly. The average American spends more than $1,000 on coffee each year. If you're looking for a way to earn back your annual coffee budget while doing as little work as possible, check out this job opening from business.org. The small business resource site will pay one lucky person $1,000 to drink coffee for a month and document their experience. The only catch is that corporate chains like Starbucks, Dunkin' Donuts, and Gregory's are off limits. In an effort to support small businesses, business.org will require its professional coffee drinkers to get their Java fix via local cafes. If they're a self-professed Frappuccino addict, that's even better. The gig is all about comparing independent coffee shops to major chains and noting the benefits and drawbacks of both. The chosen candidate will be given 25% of their $1,000 paycheck up front, which they can use to buy their beverages. The remainder of their earnings will be paid out at the end of the month. Job requirements include visiting at least 8 locally owned coffee shops, photographing every cup that's purchased, and recording information like the cost, perks, and inconveniences of going local, all while avoiding brand name coffee shops. The coffee connoisseur will also be tasked with sharing their experience on social media. While having a strong social presence is a plus, it's not essential, though. To apply, fill out the online application form with your location, current occupation, contact information, and social media handles. You will also need to upload a video pitching yourself for the role and write a short essay stating why you'd be a good fit. If just thinking about getting the job has you craving local coffee, check out the best independent coffee shop in your state at metalfloss.com. And now, let's move on to some outrageous and totally bogus news from TheOnion.com. From TheOnion.com, news in brief. Pompeo to increase bombing in Afghanistan after figuring they'll miss and hit Iran at some point. September 19, 2019, Washington. Explaining how human error or inaccuracy of the weaponry should eventually produce the desired result, Secretary of State Mike Pompeo reportedly ordered the military Thursday to increase bombing in Afghanistan after figuring that they'll miss and hit Iran at some point. I am ordering a sustained bombing offensive in Afghanistan since there's a really good chance that if we launch enough missiles, one of them has to veer off course and eventually strike Iran, said Pompeo, adding that they are going to make sure to put their most inept military commanders in charge of the air attacks and just wait until one ballistic missile deviates and destroys a residential neighborhood in the Islamic Republic. Instead of directly engaging with Iran, we're just going to send a bunch more drones to Afghanistan and let our incompetence play itself out. Given our track record, it really shouldn't take too long. At press time, Pompeo decided that the U.S. military might as well ratchet up bombing in Syria and Yemen to make it happen even faster. From TheOnion.com, news in brief. Vatican forced to revoke dozens of sainthoods after discovering miracles performed with eldritch magic. September 23, 2019, Vatican City. After uncovering uncompromising historical records in the Holy See's archive, the Vatican announced Monday that they would disavow dozens of saints who had performed their miracles using eldritch magic, derived from sources of sheer madness and chaos. Effective immediately upon learning that many of these miracles were performed using sorcery of the darkest and most horrific variety, we have decided to strip these individuals of their sainthood, said Pope Francis, noting that he had been shaken to his core by revelations that Saint Bartholomew had been spotted consorting with an 11-feet-tall being of writhing tendrils and dimly lit eyes before following the abomination into a churning tunnel coated in countless rows of human teeth. What frightens me most is the contemporary sources suggesting that my patron, Saint Francis of Assisi, was seen carrying around a grimoire bound in human flesh just before the healing miracle at Nardi. I don't want to believe something like this is possible. Yet, while touring the papal catacombs, I have often heard softly hissing voices speaking in a demented tongue unknown to any man. At press time, Francis announced that the Swiss Guard had been dispatched to destroy the former saint's relics and pour sacramental elixirs onto the ashes, although he feared even this would not be enough to hold their ineffable horrors at bay. From TheOnion.com, news in brief. Trump confirms that it was Iran, or some country like that, behind Saudi oil attacks. September 17, 2019, Washington. Addressing the recent attacks on Saudi Arabia that took out more than half that nation's oil production capacity, President Trump told reporters Tuesday the precision-targeted bombings were a major act of aggression by Iran, or some country like that. The primary actor behind the strike on our Saudi allies was definitely Iran, or one of those countries in that same part of the world, someplace with a lot of deserts, a lot of Muslims, a lot of guys with beards, Trump said to members of the White House press corps, adding, Syria maybe? Jordan? Before his voice dropped off into an inaudible mumble. The American people can trust we will take swift action against Qatar? No, that's not it. We're pretty sure Saudi Arabia didn't do it, because why would they? Why would you bomb your own oil refineries? Then again, you never know. You never can tell. What do you guys think? The president later clarified that the United States would bomb whichever country the Saudis paid it to bomb. From TheOnion.com, news in brief. Working in general vicinity for 8 hours a day, misinterpreted as friendship. September 16th, 2019. Nashua, New Hampshire. Saying he had wholly misread his office mate's mild, occasional interest in talking to him, sources confirmed Monday that local software engineer Michael Donner had mistakenly concluded that sitting in close proximity to a coworker for 8 hours each day constituted friendship. Yeah, I guess you could say Dave Reynolds and I are pretty tight, said the clearly confused Donner, appearing to believe that simply because they share an office and thus engage in brief and perfunctory exchanges from time to time, Reynolds must consider him some sort of deeply cherished companion with whom he has forged an intimate bond. We'll get to talking and have a lot of really great, banal discussions about the weather or lunch. Dave and I even have our own little two-word pleasantries voiced to avoid awkward silence after accidentally making eye contact. What can I say? He's the best. When reached for comment on the relationship, Dave Reynolds required multiple clarifications before figuring out which Michael at the office reporters were referring to. From TheOnion.com, news in brief. New biblical evidence reveals Christ suffered extensive brain damage during time lying dead in tomb. September 12, 2019, Jerusalem. Shedding new light upon the religious figure's state after the resurrection, archaeologists from the University of Oxford discovered new evidence Thursday revealing that Christ suffered severe brain damage during his time lying dead in the tomb. Although Christ was able to rise after his period in the tomb, our findings suggest that he had lost a significant number of brain cells as a consequence of lying deceased for 72 hours straight, said Dr. Tara O'Rourke, noting that oxygen deprivation from his death led to motor failure that required him to be carried by disciples, as well as memory loss that resulted in Jesus repeatedly mistaking Mary Magdalene and Luke for his mother and father. Obviously, the 11 remaining disciples were overjoyed when they first saw their Messiah had risen. But that quickly gave way to concern when they heard him badly slurring his command to baptize all nations in the name of the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit. There's also evidence suggesting that the motor loss required him to be carried to the Sea of Galilee and mash up most of his meals to aid with his difficulties swallowing. Given the scale of his disability, it was clearly a relief for his caretakers when he ascended to heaven after only 40 days. O'Rourke added, however, that considering the extent of Christ's neurological damage, it was really a miracle he even arose at all. From TheOnion.com, news in brief. Harvard officials say $8.9 million donation from Jeffrey Epstein was from brief recovery period when he wasn't a pedophile. September 13, 2019, Cambridge, Massachusetts. Emphasizing that the late billionaire was only having sex with consenting adults at the time, Harvard officials said Friday that the nearly $9 million Jeffrey Epstein gave to the university was received during a brief recovery period when he did not engage in pedophilia. I want to be clear. These donations were made only at times when Mr. Epstein was not actively involved in molesting, raping, or trafficking underage girls. said Harvard President Lawrence Bacow, adding that the university had monitored the convicted felon's sex life closely to ensure all checks were written and deposited during intervals in which Epstein completely abstained from intercourse with children. While Jeffrey struggled and eventually relapsed into pedophilia, I want to assure our community that Harvard went to great lengths not to accept his money while he abused minors. In addition, I can confirm that when Epstein was a visiting fellow in our psychology department back in 2005, he only had sex with women who had turned 18. Bacow later clarified that the university's anti-pedophile policy only applied to Epstein and would not have any effect on Harvard Emeritus Law Professor Alan Dershowitz. From TheOnion.com News in Brief, ex-CIA agent Valerie Plame releases campaign video depicting her torturing voters. September 10, 2019, Santa Fe, New Mexico. Announcing her intent to run as a Democrat for New Mexico's 3rd Congressional District, former CIA agent and author Valerie Plame released a campaign video Monday in which she is shown using the skills she learned as a spy to torture voters. "Hi, my name is Valerie Plame, and I want to put my specialized CIA training to work for the American people," said Plame in the video, which shows her smiling with a diverse group of potential voters before zip-tying their wrists, covering their heads with bags, and locking them in the trunk of a black Chevy Camaro. "Whether I'm fighting to secure infrastructure funding, working to improve health care, or rounding up our most suspicious residents and simulating their drowning, I will stop at nothing to protect New Mexico families. I've got a few scores to settle, and that's why I'm asking for your vote." As the video closes, Plame was seen in a local diner beating a 70-year-old man to within an inch of his life after having deprived him of sleep and water for days. From TheOnion.com, News in Brief. Liberty University Board concerned Falwell's corruption risks undercutting college's mission of subjugating women and gay people. September 9, 2019, Lynchburg, Virginia. Expressing fears that the recent scandal could harm the institution's reputation, members of the Liberty University Board told reporters Monday they were concerned that investigations into Jerry Falwell's Junior's corruption risked undermining the college's core mission of subjugating women and gay people. "When students pay tuition to Liberty University, we want them to be confident that their money is going towards fighting female bodily autonomy and torturing gay children. But these rampant ethical concerns make it hard for them to trust us," said Trustee Vance Weir, acknowledging that stories about the university's president using college funds to enrich his inner circle could distract from the school's long-held commitment to propagating the belief that homosexuals should not exist and females are merely sexual objects. "I'm deeply worried about how far we've strayed from the school's original purpose. Jerry Falwell Sr. founded this university in 1971 to help straight, white, Christian men continue their dominion over other groups by any means necessary, not to line their own pockets." Weir added that despite Falwell Jr.'s inappropriate actions, he knew that in his heart the university's president was deeply committed to the important work of dehumanizing others. And that's all we have time for tonight. You've been listening to Strange Brew, with stories from September 2019 mentalfloss.com and September 2019 theonion.com. I hope you enjoyed the program and you'll tune in again next Friday for more Strange Brew. Until then, this is Barb Magella wishing you a good evening and a great week.